You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Good teams win, great teams cover. On that positive note, welcome into Locked On Rockets, your home for daily and post-game commentary on your Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official flagship. I opened with good teams win, great teams cover, because the Rockets 119-114 winners in Denver on Sunday night. The spread was 4.5, so by virtue of one free throw in the closing seconds, the Rockets did cover, but fortunately got the win, more importantly, pushing them to 46-13 on the year. It's their 12th consecutive victory overall, holding them at the number one spot in the Western Conference, ahead of the Golden State Warriors, who have 14 losses. A big win for the Rockets over a Denver team that certainly appears playoff bound. Entered 33-26, winners of 4 in a row, 7 in their last 10, had scored 122 points in a victory over San Antonio, arguably the league's best defense, on Friday night. So even though the Rockets had it easy over the Nuggets, their first two games in Houston, wins by 26-30, the Nuggets certainly not a bad team at all, and even though the Rockets had multiple leads of 17 points in this game, the Nuggets kept coming, they kept challenging the Rockets, especially in transition, so many athletes, the effort was there, the Nuggets clearly wanted this game, ended up with 35 points in the fourth quarter, and so I don't necessarily see it as a lagging night for the Rockets. Again, the Nuggets scored 122 points on the Spurs on Friday. They're a good team with a lot of playmakers, and in my opinion, a lot of folks have maybe overestimated the ease of that playoff series against the Nuggets, because folks, the two games that you beat them at, those were in Houston, and while granted you have some advantage, I think Clint Capella, even though it wasn't a banner night for him overall tonight, far too many turnovers with 6 and 27 minutes, I think his athleticism poses some problems for Jokic, but in general, the bigger issue for the Nuggets, they have a tough time guarding James Harden on the pick and rolls. There's not a big that can switch onto him, certainly not Jokic. There's certainly not a perimeter defender you can trust either, and that played a big role in how James Harden dominated this game. 41 points, 8 rebounds, 7 assists, 11 of 20 from the field, and 6 of 10 from behind the arc. Now, the Rockets dominated in the first half, went into the break with a 66-52 lead. Maybe they ran out of steam a bit in the second half, playing in the high altitude of Denver. I think more so it was the pace that Harden was on in the first half, 27-5-4, was unsustainable for a full game, even for James. I don't think 60-point triple-double should be expected. And I think the Nuggets, ultimately, with so many playmakers, a great team in transition, and then Jokic on the interior, they were able to kind of keep grinding, keep pushing, eventually get enough easy buckets to make it close, got it down to 4 at one point in the fourth quarter. But when the Rockets needed Harden, even though he wasn't as dominant in the second half as he was in the first, he was there when the Rockets needed him most late in the game after it was 4 back-to-back buckets. Well, one, he drew a foul on the way to the line, made 2 free throws, then had the step-back dagger 3. One day after, Daryl Morey, speaking at the Sloan Conference in Boston, called him perhaps the greatest isolation player in the history of the NBA. Well, folks, James Harden definitely showed that on Sunday night against the Nuggets, that he's at least in the conversation. Because the Nuggets, and I think why the Rockets see Denver as a favorable playoff opponent, is there's just no easy way for them to guard James Harden. And if you can't defend option A for the Rockets, it's really tough to see a path where you can beat them 4 times out of 7, or even 2 times out of 7, to push it into being a longer series. So ultimately, the Nuggets, they got enough easy baskets. Also, the Rockets, I thought, were a little bit careless with the ball, 18 turnovers. And we mentioned not an efficient night for Clint Capella, 6 points, 7 rebounds in his 27 minutes, 6 turnovers, a minus 10, which was by far the worst of any player on the Rockets. Credit to Jokic, who knew he would bounce back, especially at home. Denver, kind of the quintessential team, young, with so many athletic role players. Those are the types of teams that tend to play much better at home. We mentioned what they did against the Spurs on Friday, and to their credit, they played much more competitively against the Rockets than they did in Houston, but ultimately James Harden, the MVP frontrunner, far too much, as we said, 41-8-7, and even if he wasn't there the entire second half the way he was in the first, he delivered late, and the best plus-minus on the Rockets fittingly belonged to James Harden, who was plus 12 in his 37 minutes in that 119-114 win, and he had it in every way. Also, I did mention, got to the line 16 times and made 13 of those. So yes, he made his 3, 6 of 10 from behind the arc, but it wasn't like he was just hot. He was springy. He was able to drive to the rim, and even if he wasn't able to get clean looks at the rim, because certainly the Nuggets closed it up late in the fourth quarter, well, that's when James got to the line. Also early in the game, got fouled on 2 3-point makes. And if James gets to the line 16 times, on top of everything else he brings to the table and shooting 60% from three, well, he's going to be unstoppable. And that's the case tonight. Now, in general, I do want to, as I said, touch on the fact that I don't think the Nuggets are quite as great of a matchup as everyone suspected. Now, I'd say they're a good matchup for the Rockets based on the difficulty in defending Harden, but especially playing in the mile-high altitude, there's enough there for them to take a game from the Rockets or the Warriors or any high seed they potentially play. Although with the Spurs and Timberwolves, now the Timberwolves being without Jimmy Butler for 4 to 6 weeks, having their own issues, it's entirely possible the Nuggets could climb up into the upper half of the Western Conference playoff standings. We'll have to wait and see. But the point is, you don't get to 33-26, which the Nuggets were entering tonight, winners of 4 in a row, 7 of the last 10, including a win over the Spurs on Friday, in which they scored 122, being talentless. There's enough talent there that even if it doesn't translate to Houston, you could see a route to where they could give the Rockets or any top team a challenge between the depth, the physicality of Jokic on the interior, the depth of quality players at the wing spots. Even though it wasn't a banner night for Gary Harris, you look at Will Barton, who had 25 points on 10 of 15 shooting. Gary Harris, 2 of 12, but certainly is capable of much more than what he showed you tonight. Jamal Murray, 19 points, 8 of 13 from the field. Trey Lyles, who seems to torch the Rockets every time off the bench in that stretch 4 role, 5 of 8 for 12 points and 4 rebounds, also 4 assists. They moved the ball so, so well. The Rockets actually were out-assisted. I don't know if that's an expression. I'm going to make it one. 33-18, which is a reflection of how well the Nuggets play as a team. And while they don't defend what the Rockets do best, which is that pick and roll led by James Harden, there's enough there to win. So I'm not going to say that the Rockets did anything wrong in letting, well, of course you do some things wrong, but nothing terribly in terms of the Nuggets getting back from down 17 to making it as close as 4 down the stretch. The Nuggets are a quality team. They were playing at home. They were rested. They clearly wanted this game. So rather than nitpick what was clearly an outlier for the Rockets in terms of too many turnovers, and Clint Capella in particular, just 6 points, 7 rebounds in his 27 minutes, I think you should probably feel better that the Rockets, despite those outliers, were able to beat a playoff team on the road. And even when things weren't going well for them late, they did what great teams do. They closed. Chris Paul had a big bucket late, even though it wasn't a great night for Chris overall. He, well, 23 points, 6 assists, 5 rebounds, also made 9 of 10 free throws, got fouled a lot down the stretch, and made nearly all of those. And then, as we mentioned earlier, James Harden. So rather than dwell on what was kind of an uncharacteristic night and what amounted to a very athletic Denver team simply making some plays, especially in transition, are there things the Rockets could have done better in transition defense? Yes. Are there things they could have done taking care of the ball better than they did? Absolutely. But teams are going to make runs at you, especially playoff teams when you're in their gym and they're rested. Great teams just have to withstand them. That's what the Rockets did. And ultimately, I wouldn't say Denver is a great matchup for them. That's why I didn't have them last week on my playoff preview show at number 1. I would still say the Clippers, because the Clippers to me have the least overall talent in terms of difference makers of any of the teams the Rockets could conceivably play in the first round. So I wouldn't say the Nuggets are the top of the list, but they are a good matchup. And ultimately, even though the Nuggets played very well, had a lot of energy, closed the game well in their gym, the Rockets had the one advantage, which was with the Nuggets, there was just no real way to guard James Harden, the league's MVP frontrunner, especially on those pick and rolls. Harden torched them over and over again. In the second half, ran out of a little bit of juice, but when it mattered late, he found a way to get the job done, and the Rockets, as a result, got the 119-114 win. Now, we spent the initial segment of our 3 points recap talking about James Harden because, folks, when you have 41-7-8 and you're the league's MVP frontrunner and you get the dagger shot in isolation that's on my Twitter feed at Ben Dubose one day after your general manager, Daryl Morey, calls you arguably the greatest isolation player in the history of the NBA, yes, this was James Harden's game. And Chris Paul, even though he was a -4 in his 32 minutes, 23-6-5, made 9 of his 10 free throws down the stretch. It had been a while since the Rockets had played a close game. They finally got one from a quality opponent on the road, and they found a way to get the win regardless. That's what great teams do. And because of that, they're 46-13 now and winners of 12 in a row. But folks, this was far from just James Harden and Chris Paul. And what really stood out to me tonight, look up and down the Rockets' rotation. Trevor Ariza, we mentioned his positive shooting the other night, his first game back from missing nearly 3 weeks with a hamstring injury. Tonight, 14 points on 5 of 7 shooting, 3 of 4 from behind the arc. P.J. Tucker in his 24 minutes, 3 of 5 from behind the arc. Ryan Anderson off the bench in 20 minutes, 4 of 6 shooting, 5 rebounds, and a plus 10. And Ryan actually did not make a 3. He was 0 of 2 from behind the arc. So he did all of his work making plays through energy, which, as I mentioned, if you keep Ryan closer to 20 minutes per game, perhaps that's the secret to unlocking things in Ryan besides just the 3-point shooting. Because, yes, Ryan has evolved over his NBA career into an elite 3-point shooter, but think about Ryan Anderson early in his career in Orlando and New Orleans before age and maybe the neck surgery took a bit of a toll on his athleticism. He was not just a shooter. He was active. He could throw his body out there on the offensive glass. He could play in space. Eventually, I would say the wear and tear and then getting closer to 30, that's taken a bit of a toll, but that's because generally the Rockets and other teams have asked him to play close to 30 minutes per game. If you keep him closer to 20, we have seen from time to time this year individual big games against the likes of the Spurs, the Warriors, where he's had double-digit rebounds. It's just he's not really capable of doing that on an every-night basis, or he's going to wear down. But maybe if you keep him at 20, he had 6 the other night. Tonight he had 5 in 20 minutes, which, you know, if you're at a starter's pace, is close to double digits. And again, 8 points, 4 of 6 shooting, and he didn't even make a 3. His shots were made, well, one, he had the spinning shot in the fourth quarter off the dribble. Another, he had the bank shot off of 1 foot. I called it Ryan Nowitzki on Twitter. But I think keeping Ryan off the bench, we've mentioned in the past the virtues of bringing him off the bench against opposing second-team units. Well, another benefit to that is you're just reducing his overall minutes, period. So hopefully you bring things besides just the 3-point shot to his disposal in terms of what he can bring you in a given game. Luke Bamute, he was 0-4 from behind the arc, but just like Ryan, he was still a difference maker. Actually, Luke's plus 12 in 23 minutes was tied with James Harden for the best on the Rockets. And that's in large part, well, of course, his defense, which is nearly always elite. But despite the fact he was 0-4 from outside the arc, he was 3-4 from inside it. Luke has gotten so good at making plays off the dribble. And even if he doesn't finish, just the fact that you have a wing that is capable of attacking and making plays off the bounce, attacking the rim, that's another dimension that has to be accounted for. That's another layer. And that goes a long way towards getting looks for guys like Ryan Anderson, like P.J. Tucker, because there's no one that you can help off if you have to account for even a Luke Bamute slashing to the rim at any given point. And tonight, he didn't just slash. He actually made 3 of his 4 shots, and that was a big part of why he was plus 12, tied for Harden for the best on the team in just his 23 minutes. You can go up and down the roster. Brandon Wright, the first night he played, the Rockets started back-to-back. They have to play tomorrow night in Utah against the Jazz team that had been on an 11-game winning streak until the other night, led by Rudy Gobert. That's a little bit more of a traditional half-court set. Maybe that's Nene's calling. So tonight against the Nuggets, a lot more open-court play. You mentioned the transition and that call for Brandon Wright. Well, Brandon Wright tonight in his 15 minutes was a plus 9. 4 points, 2 rebounds, 2 of 3. But what he showed you more than any individual stat line, because nobody's going to write home about 4 points, 2 rebounds, 2 of 3 shooting, it was how he can play in space. There was one sequence, either late in the third or early in the fourth quarter, I called out on my Twitter timeline, where the Nuggets were trying to come back. Beasley had a look at what would have been a big 3. I think it would have cut it to single digits. And Wright closed out on the 3 to where Beasley did not feel comfortable taking that. Then drove to the bucket. And not only did Wright recover enough to challenge the shot, he recovered enough to reject the shot on the drive as well. That takes an extreme amount of athleticism for a center to be able to both contest the 3-point shot and recover against a penetrating guard to deny at the rim as well. That's what Brandon Wright gives you. Now again, I don't expect him to play every night. We've seen Nene. I think he'll take this as a challenge in certain matchups, probably tomorrow night in Utah. That's going to be more advantageous for Nene. But what you want is the ability to mix and match. Some matchups are going to call for more vertical spacing, which is something that Wright gave you tonight. There was a sequence in the first half where even though Wright was not there for the lob, it opened up the lane for Chris Paul to get to the rim because they had to respect that lob. That's something that's not there if you have Nene or Tarik Black. It's just going to be dependent on the matchup. So, depending on who you play, some are going to be better for Brandon Wright, some are going to be better for Nene, and who knows, maybe the competition just brings out the best in both players. But the bottom line, as was the case Friday night, the Rockets well, they played just 9 men tonight rather than 10, but you have so many quality contributions up and down the lineup. We mentioned, again, Trevor Ariza, 14 points, 5 of 7, 3 of 4 behind the arc. P.J. Tucker, 9 points, 3 of 5 from behind the arc. Ryan Anderson, 8 and 5, plus 10 in his 20 minutes. Brandon Wright, 4 and 2, but his defense was the main factor, as we're explaining, his ability to play in space, the vertical spacing on offense, plus 9 in his 15 minutes. Luke Bamute, a team best, plus 12 in his 23 minutes. Joe Johnson, 7 points, 2 rebounds in 29 minutes, which actually was the most of anyone on their team other than Chris Paul at 32, Trevor Ariza at 33, and James Harden at 37. And so we'll talk about that down the home stretch, the final segment of our show. But there's so much trust. No one other than James Harden at 37, and folks, James Harden's the league's MVP front runner. He's 28 years old. If the game is there for the taking, and against a playoff opponent on the road, it's no shame in this game being close in the fourth quarter. James is going to play 37 minutes. Well, folks, other than James, no one played more than 33 minutes. And only two players even played more than 30 minutes. And that was Chris Paul and Trevor Ariza, barely above, at 32 and 33. So the reason I'm pointing this out is, and this was even without Eric Gordon, who remains out due to illness, but as was the case Friday, the Rockets are so deep now after adding Joe Johnson and Brandon Wright, you can take away the reigning sixth man of the year, and they are still so deep that no one is having to play extended minutes. And because of that, I think there is a strong correlation with the increased efficiency that you're seeing from guys like Trevor Ariza, 3 or 4 from behind the arc, and it's 33 minutes. You're not having to extend him closer to 40 in a setting against Denver's long and just seemingly unlimited stable of perimeter playmakers. You typically had run Ariza out there for 40-plus in this setting. You didn't tonight. P.J. Tucker only had to play 24, and he was 3 of 5. Luke Bamute, Ryan Anderson, they didn't make their threes, but certainly they were very energetic, and I think keeping them to the low 20s is a big part of why they can give everything they have rather than feel like they have to condition themselves for 30, 35 minutes a night. That's what depth does. And certainly you hope that you'll see it tomorrow night in Utah as well. No one was particularly overextended, although with this being an altitude situation, I think in an ideal world you would be able to keep Harden below 35 minutes. But the Nuggets are a quality team. You just got to get this one before you can worry about the next one. But in general, other than altitude, no one overextended. That's a big part of why they're set up well, I think, for tomorrow night in Utah. But more importantly than that, I think that's a big part of why the Rockets were so efficient as a team. Over 50% shooting overall from the field, nearly 43% shooting from three, 81% plus from the line. They were not always efficient. We mentioned the 18 turnovers, but folks, they were just incredibly good shooting the basketball. They were fresh. They also out-rebounded the Nuggets. Even with Jokic, that's not an easy thing to do, but the Rockets, 42 rebounds to 36, and that's despite Jokic out-rebounding Capella 14-7. So that shows you just how many contributions the Rockets had up and down the roster. So even if the Nuggets, again, the Nuggets had 33 assists to 13 turnovers. The Nuggets had 18, the Rockets, excuse me, had 18 assists to 18 turnovers. So there were times that the Nuggets were a smarter team, and maybe you'd expect that playing at home. You can say the Rockets getting up to a 15-plus point lead early in the game, maybe that made them take it a little bit too lax. But the bottom line is, whatever the Rockets lacked in terms of decision-making, being a little lethargic from time to time, you mentioned the transition defense earlier, they made up for it in the end with sheer energy, winning the rebounding battle, getting out, getting in transition, making plays down the stretch, and then we mentioned the shooting. I think a big part of their efficiency is just because of how fresh they are, and I think it all goes to the depth. And it's less about any one individual player. I know that's kind of usually the theme we go to in our 3 points recap, but the Rockets now, that they're 9 or 10 plus deep, they were 9 tonight without even playing Gerald Green and with Eric Gordon, the reigning sixth man of the year, out due to illness. I think it's less about any one player when you look at the supporting cast to James Harden and Chris Paul, and more about the cumulative effect and what that effect does for the role players up and down the roster in terms of keeping them fresh and in a position to make more buckets. Now, for the final segment of the show, I want to discuss what's kind of the elephant in the room, which I've seen a lot of talk on Twitter about Joe Johnson, who played a whopping 29 minutes tonight. That's more than P.J. Tucker. That's more than Luke Bamute. And it's more than Gerald Green, who did not play at all. Now, folks, there are going to be some matchups where Gerald might get a look, but Joe Johnson is simply a much more versatile player. We actually saw him with a big post bucket in the second half, and that's a dimension that he has. Joe was one of three from behind the arc, did not shoot that much from three, but I thought the Nuggets had to respect him as a shooter. I thought he provided something from a spacing standpoint, but in general, Joe just has more dimensions to his game. He can play more positions, whereas Gerald, it's not that he's a useless player. He's been beneficial to the Rockets. It's just Joe, there's a higher degree of comfort to him just because when it comes to his passing, his defense, he's not a one-trick pony, which Gerald, as fun as he is, it's about whether Gerald is putting the ball in the hole. If he's not, there's not a whole heck of a lot else that he's giving you. Whereas I understand why Joe is taking his minutes. It is fair to wonder about Joe playing 29 minutes relative to Tucker at 24 and Luke Bamute at 23. Now, keep in mind, this could be correlated a bit with the absence of Eric Gordon. Because Eric Gordon, even if he's not making his shots, there's been so much made of him being below 34% from behind the arc this year. But he's respected as an elite shooter. He's there for spacing. I think part of the increased minutes for Johnson, and I know some folks are surprised because he's only been a Rocket for not even 2 weeks and has barely been through a few practices, and now he's playing 29 minutes per game again. There's obviously a lot of trust between head coach Mike D'Antoni and Joe based on his long career. Joe, now 36 years old, of course, played for him 12 years ago in Phoenix. And I'm not going to say he's a better player than Luke Bamute or P.J. Tucker. It looked like tonight that D'Antoni wanted to close the game with Johnson. That was his lineup, with Johnson at the four, starting at the five-minute mark of the fourth quarter. Then with just under 2 minutes left, he flipped it, substituted P.J. Tucker for Joe Johnson. I think felt that they were giving away a little too much defensively. And so there's a fine line to walk there. But I would say overall, when you look at the minute total, 29 versus 24 for Tucker, 23 for Luke, I think it's less about comparing Joe to those guys, and it's more about comparing Joe to the absence of Eric Gordon and the importance of spacing, especially with those second units. I think that's where Mike D'Antoni respects Joe Johnson. It's not even so much that he makes the threes, although he did make one of his threes tonight, and you need him to do that from time to time just to keep the defenses honest, but it's more having the dynamic out there, which Eric provides, to at least give the spacing for Chris Paul on that second unit to be able to attack the rim. So in terms of those worried about the minutes for Joe Johnson, folks, I don't expect Gerald Green to jump Joe Johnson anytime soon. Now, there might be some matchups where if the Rockets are lethargic, you just need a shot in the arm. And if you put in Gerald Green, he's the kind of guy, even if he's inefficient, he's capable of catching fire at any moment, pouring in 6 or 9 points in just a couple of minutes. And there are going to be games down the stretch where you may need that. And so I think you look at it as kind of a quick microwave solution. But by and large, I think Joe is ahead of Gerald, and I think there are justified reasons for that. I do see some reasons to worry if you consistently play Joe ahead of Luke or PJ, because those two guys, when you consider their defense relative to a 36-year-old Joe Johnson, those guys, more often than not, when I say those guys, I mean Luke and PJ, are probably going to be more valuable overall players. However, tonight, I would not worry about it that much because of the absence of Eric Gordon. And in my opinion, the emphasis that the Rockets, especially this high-octane team in Denver, felt they probably needed the spacing to open things up for Chris Paul and James Harden. Now, is there a possibility that Mike D'Antoni could over-rely on his veteran, the familiar Joe Johnson? Yes, there is. And so you should keep a watchful eye on it, I would say. But I don't think you can really draw too many conclusions from the minutes at this point until you get Eric Gordon back. Because Eric Gordon, yes, the Rockets are winning without him, but folks, he's a key part of this puzzle. The reigning sixth man of the year, a guy who, when healthy, is probably going to average 28 to 30 minutes per game. We've seen him for sure this year be at a borderline all-star level. He is still a big part of what the Rockets can do, even if we haven't seen him that much lately. Been out with an illness the last two games, then before the all-star break, had minor issues with his back and then his knee. So I don't think the Rockets are overly concerned about what's going on with Eric, but in terms of the Joe Johnson minutes factor, I don't think you can draw too many conclusions about what the optimal distribution or what Mike D'Antoni envisions this to look like in terms of who plays how many minutes per game until you get Eric back. Because right now, I think you're simply seeing Joe as a shooting option cover some of those perimeter responsibilities that would otherwise belong to Eric. Now, when Eric gets back, I would not be surprised to see if that cuts into Joe's minutes a little bit, as opposed to Luke and PJ, who stay relatively steady because the need for their defense never goes away. So I want to do the final segment just acknowledging I see the concerns out there. I get where you're coming from. But with Eric Gordon out, to me, it's not the time to push the panic button on, well, is Mike D'Antoni too trusting of his 36-year-old former player. Should you watch it? Sure. But to me, you have to wait until Eric Gordon gets back before you have a good sense for how Mike D'Antoni envisions this new rotation now with Joe Johnson, Brandon Wright, and Gerald Green supplementing the initial nine that started the year to kind of get a sense for where this may shake out as we go down the home stretch of the year. So with that said, I will wrap it there. Don't want to go on too long because, folks, we got another game tomorrow night. Rockets against the Utah Jazz team that had just won 11 in a row until their loss the other night. Very hot. It's going to be a very different game. We mentioned in talking about Brandon Wright versus Nene. When you think the Utah Jazz, you think Rudy Gobert in the middle. Derek Favors. They're a big team. They're physical. They slow the pace. Ricky Rubio, Jay Crowder, so many athletes, so many long wing defenders. Quinn Snyder, one of the better tacticians in the NBA, especially on the defensive end. They do a great job of taking you out of what you do best. And in the middle of that 11-game streak, folks, they beat the Warriors by 30 in Utah. So they can be a bear. They can be very difficult to handle, especially on night two of a back-to-back, both in altitude. So it's going to be a challenge for the Rockets, and I don't think the Rockets will or should get too high on this one because you've got a very difficult one tomorrow night. And with the Rockets only a game up on the Warriors, now they do have the tiebreaker, but only a game up, every game counts. The good news, the Rockets, this 8-game hell stretch out of the All-Star break, well, folks, they're 2-0 into it, so you're 25% of the way through it. That's not insignificant, and they're 2-0. But yeah, you don't want to celebrate too early because, folks, Utah tomorrow night, that's going to be another big challenge. And of course, we'll break it all down right here at Locked In Rockets, your home for daily analysis of Houston Rockets basketball. So until then, if you want more from me, the best place to get it is on Twitter. You can find me at Ben Dubose, the show at Locked On Rockets, also facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, LockedOnRockets.com is our website, and LockedOnRockets@gmail.com is our email address. All of those ways that you can interact with us, ask me questions about the team, offer suggestions for the show, inquire about how to become a potential advertiser of this rapidly growing program. Pretty much anything we can do to make this a better podcast for you, a diehard Rockets fan, we would love to hear from you. Also, if you're unable to become an advertiser, but you still want to support us, the best way to do that, subscribe and leave us a 5-star review. iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone, pretty much wherever you search for your podcast, just download Locked On Rockets, become a subscriber, leave us a 5-star review. That's how we remain viable to advertisers across the country. And while you're doing that, why not give a listen to any other show across the network, including Locked On Texans. We've got great shows across the NBA and NFL, including the Houston Texans, who are about to embark on a free agency spree in a couple of weeks, in which they appear to be somewhat flush with cash. So there's a lot going on over on Kirby with the Texans. Deshaun Watson should be healthy this year, so if you haven't given them a look, hosted by Robert Land and Brian Patterson, I strongly encourage you to do so. But yeah, if you want to support any of the great activities going on here or across the network, again, subscribe, 5-star reviews. That's the best way. Even if you aren't capable of advertising and financially supporting this yourself, that's how you're able to keep us viable to people across the country and allow me to keep bringing the show to you as frequently as I do, this being the only daily podcast covering the Houston Rockets, the now 46-13-12 wins in a row Houston Rockets. So on that positive note, folks, enjoy the rest of your Sunday, have a good start to your work week, and we'll be talking again tomorrow night when the Rockets take on the Utah Jazz from Salt Lake City.